This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday after Labor Day. For President Barack Obama, it's a continuation of the labor that has characterized these waning months of his presidency, confronting the U.S. war legacy in the Pacific. A three-day visit to the tiny communist Southeast Asian nation of Laos has begun. The president flew to the capital of Vientiane, where he met with the new president, Bonhang Vorachi. Improving U.S.-Laos relations is important for an overall strategy of strengthening the so-called ASEAN nations. That's the Association of Southeast Asian Nations that was formed during the Cold War. But it may be more significant today in facing China's growing dominance in the region. The Vietnam War had consequences for Laos, which was the victim of secret U.S. bombing during the Nixon presidency, when the U.S. dropped an estimated 2 million tons of bombs, all told. The president pledged more money to clean up unexploded munitions in Laos that maim approximately 10,000 Laotians each year. There are also human rights concerns with this government in Laos, including concerns about the human rights abuses of people critical of the one-party communist state, including the disappearance of Sombat Somphan, an internationally acclaimed worker and activist who's been missing since 2012. Phil Robertson is deputy director of the Asia Division of Human Rights Watch. He joins us from Bangkok to remind us that this president is finishing up a longstanding policy shift from the Cold War era.
This is a continuation of his pivot to Asia, but obviously, we hope that he will engage with the government, that he will clean up the cluster munitions that were dropped by the United States on Laos during the Vietnam War. But we also want him to raise human rights and set a tone that Laos should care about its people and not just about economic growth and good relations with other neighboring governments.
Of course, from the Laotian perspective, cluster bombs are about human rights as well.
Yeah, and we agree. We strongly support the initiative by the administration to really put its money where its mouth is and really try to make a significant dent in cleaning up this huge UXO contamination that exists in Laos. I mean, this is one of the most heavily impacted countries in the world, and the United States bears direct responsibility for that.
Does a significant initiative on the question of munitions give the U.S. more influence on human rights politically inside of Laos?
Probably not, actually, because I think the Lao government views these things as separate. The Lao government views the issue of cleaning up the munitions as an ongoing responsibility of the United States and to be done in partnership. The disappearance of the most prominent rural development practitioner, a guy named Sombat Somphan, 3 years ago at a police checkpoint still remains unresolved. This guy was someone who was a community organizer who graduated from the University of Hawaii and won one of the most prestigious awards in Southeast Asia, the Magsaysay Award. So, you know, for them to disappear someone like that really raises some fundamental issues about human rights and rule of law in Laos.
Is there any information about his whereabouts or whether he's alive or dead?
There's none. What we know is that he was taken at a police checkpoint at a major road in the capital. It was caught on CCTV. The family has the videotape, which was actually a police videotape, but the police have refused to allow anybody else to have access to that tape after the family was able to take a copy of it with us.
Given the rise of China in the region, where does Laos stand and how worried is it about China, or how much of an ally is it with China in dealing with issues involving political instability, say, for instance, in the South China Sea?
The closest relationship that Laos has had, and almost a big brother, younger brother relationship, has been with Vietnam. And if you look at the structures of the government and the priority that the government gives, you know, really, Vietnam has been some back and forth between ruling elites in Laos and whether they favor China and Vietnam. But most analysts believe this has really been resolved in the favor of the Vietnamese. That said, I don't think Laos gains a lot by getting heavily involved in the South China Sea kerfluffle between China and other members of ASEAN.
As far as Vietnam is concerned, the U.S. has a significant influence in Vietnam. How do you think that stands at this point? And does that have leverage in terms of human rights in Laos?
I think the United States' influence in Vietnam, I mean, we've urged President Obama during previous visits to Vietnam to raise human rights issues, and he proved to be remarkably resistant to doing so. President Obama has continually failed to really take up human rights issues on these Asian trips in a systematic way.
Speaking to us from Bangkok, Phil Robertson is Deputy Director of the Asia Division of Human Rights Watch. Thanks so much, Phil.
Thank you.
So it's your last trip to Asia, and the Philippine president curses you out, so you have to cancel a planned meeting with one of the U.S.'s oldest allies and former colony. Or you fly all the way to Hangzhou, China for your last G20 summit, and as you roll to a stop, airport crews won't roll up the special red-carpeted head of state stairway so you can walk off the plane. Oh, the pitfalls of being a president. Of course, Air Force One is fully prepared for this kind of diplomatic slap in the face, and so the crew deployed its smaller, less stately fold-up staircase stored in the hull of the airplane. The president would later not make much of the Chinese incident himself, but it was a humble start to joining the international leaders at the G20 summit, his 10th and final in Hangzhou, China this weekend. The biggest development here was the reaffirmation of the mutual renewed promises to cut greenhouse gases. But China really sees this moment in American history to be an opportunity for Beijing to increase its standing in the world. Roger Baker is the Vice President of Strategic Analysis for Stratfor. He joins me now. Welcome, Roger.
Thank you.
Is this a positive farewell to the G20 for President Obama, or something of a good riddance from China?
Well, I think that on the one hand, Obama will certainly be able to play up the idea of the environmental agreements with China as being something very positive for his presidency. But certainly the Chinese did make it a point that China is very important, and that the United States' role in the global economy and as the central global figure may be waning, or at least that's how the Chinese want to portray it.
And is this tied in with the election? I mean, do the Chinese see that the end of the Obama era is the beginning of some period of instability and uncertainty as far as the U.S. role in the world is concerned?
I think there is a concern along those lines, not only in China, but in other places. That said, there really is a perception overall that as China increases in its economic activity and its international relations and its international position, as other countries continue to do so as well, that just by default, the United States takes a slightly smaller role than it had in the past.
What does the U.S. do about North Korea? Its influence there depends very much on a cooperative arrangement with China. Where do you see that at this point?
The Chinese really have not been as cooperative as the United States would like, or at least not in the way in which the United States would like. The North Koreans made a great show of launching several Nodong missiles during the G20 summit to draw attention to themselves and perhaps to emphasize the disagreements between the United States and China in that level of cooperation, to exacerbate some of the disagreements between China and the South Koreans over the deployment of THAAD. So, yes, there does need to be cooperation. What the United States would like from China is much more assertive action toward North Korea. The Chinese are very concerned about that because, in the end, they would really not like to see a destabilized North Korea along their border.
Instead, though, it seems that China is very much focused on the South China Sea and using encroachment in the South China Sea as a way of riling up Indochina, and particularly concerning Japan, where there was a meeting between President Xi and President Abe at this G20 meeting. What did they discuss?
So the Chinese and the Japanese discussed both the South China Sea, where the Chinese told Japan in no uncertain terms that they were not welcome in the South China Sea, but they also talked about easing some of the tensions in the East China Sea, establishing hotline mechanisms to be able to manage potential confrontations, and potentially restarting some joint development in the area.
Would you say that that's a sign that China wants to work with Japan, or that there's more of a strategic attempt to possibly move Japan away from the United States?
It's a combination of both. The Chinese do want to work a little bit more closely with Japan. They don't want to have direct confrontation within the region with larger powers such as Japan, such as South Korea. At the same time, by offering incentives for cooperation, by offering potential economic relations to grow and to increase, they're hoping that that does get Japan looking more at the bilateral relationship with China rather than looking at itself as a ally partner with the United States and looking at the U.S. agenda in the region.
With all of the rhetoric in the presidential campaign against the TPP agreement, I would suspect that President Obama couldn't even bring up the subject with a straight face as far as the other leaders are concerned. They have no assurance that the U.S. is going to endorse and ratify this agreement.
Certainly with the TPP, this has been a very difficult meeting for Obama. He's tried to reassure everyone that he will be able to push for TPP after the U.S. election and before the U.S. inauguration. The Japanese have been talking about moving forward with their ratification, but it is looking less and less likely, at least in the near term, that TPP has a strong chance. And that changes a lot of the expectations in the region, particularly with countries like Vietnam that were making adjustments based on the idea of what they were going to gain from TPP.
So all in all, and you mentioned it at the beginning of our conversation, if we were to give a sense of the legacy of President Barack Obama with the G20, and particularly in terms of the rising economy of China, it would have to be the climate change agreements that we're going to remember 10, 20 years from now.
That would seem to be the biggest success for Obama in this forum.
And do you think they're going to be very much the beginning of something that's going to continue for the next 10 or 20 years, or will we see a reversal?
Well, we've seen climate change be a very difficult type of problem for countries to actually implement on a unified scale. There are some aspects that are going to go forward here, but certainly there's a lot of room for slow progress or even reversal along some trend lines.
All right. Roger Baker is the Vice President of Strategic Analysis for Stratfor. You spoke to us from Austin, Texas. Thanks, Roger.
Thank you.